I'm like the water when your ship rolled in that night. Rough on the surface, but you cut through like a knife.
Why can't Taylor Swift just let us live? On Friday, just 4.5 months after she released the heavily Grammy-nominated Folklore, Taylor Swift released her 9th album, Evermore.
The more that you say, the less I know. Wherever you stray, I follow. I'm begging for you to take my hand. Wreck my plans, that's my man.
Swift describes Evermore as a sister album to Folklore, and once again she's crafting moody and autumnal folk songs. I'm Stephen Thompson, and today we are talking about Taylor Swift's new album, Evermore, on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the new Showtime limited series, Your Honor, an edge-of-your-seat thriller starring Bryan Cranston. Your Honor is the story of a respected New Orleans judge whose teenage son is involved in a hit-and-run. What follows is a deadly game of lies, deceit, and impossible choices. Your Honor, premiering December 6th on Showtime. Try 30 days free, then just $8.99 for life. Go to Showtime.com. Terms apply. New customers only.
Welcome back. Joining us from St. Petersburg, Florida, is NPR Music's very own Taylor Swift correspondent, Lindsay McKenna. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Stephen.
It's great to talk to you yet again about Taylor Swift some more.
Yet again. When are we not talking about Taylor, really?
Well, when she's not putting out an album, which is never. Okay, so Taylor Swift has done a remarkable job making people feel unproductive during a pandemic. In July, she released Folklore, which was very much a pandemic record. It's interior and stately and beautiful and very consistent, and it's been enormously well-received. It's nominated for a bunch of Grammys, including Album of the Year, which I suspect it will win. And now, 4.5 months later, she's released Evermore. The album shares many of the same collaborators as she had on Folklore, including Aaron Dessner of The National and Jack Antonoff. Evermore does bring in more guest vocalists in addition to the return of Bon Iver's Justin Vernon. We hear the voices of Haim, Marcus Mumford, and The National's Matt Berninger. Lindsay, you are a Taylor Swift superfan and a National superfan, so you continue to be super served by 2020. What do you think of Evermore?
I feel incredibly guilty, first of all, because not many people are getting a thing that they want this year. It's been an incredibly tough year all around. So thank you to Taylor Swift. Thank you to Jack Antonoff. Thank you to Aaron Dessner. What do I think of Evermore? Feels complicated because Folklore really took me by such surprise. Taylor Swift did something that she hadn't really done before, which is not have this protracted album rollout. Here again with Evermore, we have the element of surprise that just, you know, some 16 hours in advance, she announced that the record was coming. To be clear, I like Evermore. Do I like Folklore a little bit more right now? You know, after just my initial couple of spins, after trying to dive into the lyrics, right now, I feel like it's less even. I think that you touched on something that really was profound to me about Folklore, is that it was so consistent that across the board, it felt like you didn't have these really clear weak spots like she's had on some of her previous records. I think she's always struggled with identifying singles that are really reflective. And I felt like Cardigan was like actually a good pick. Willow is a good choice. I think there's like such clear cohesion. She's drawing a literal string, a golden thread in the video between Willow and Cardigan. So clearly there's a continuity. I think there's a cohesion to the work, but I also feel like perhaps some of the musicianship of the performers, again, working with these collaborators who are very common to sort of NPR music artist favorites, maybe masks some of the weirdness and clunkiness of the lyrics. I like that she's a little more abstract. I like that she's, again, creating these narratives that are really like detailed and evocative. But I do think that there are some moments that feel a little clunky, a little not quite right, like doesn't stick the landing quite as like extravagantly and beautifully. But again, like she's really doing something sparse and intricate and unique.
Yeah, I agree with you pretty much across the board. I think the word that kept coming back to me about Folklore, and I kind of revisited that album for the first time in a while recently, is how unbelievably consistent it is. I think it is 17 excellent songs. I kind of think it's 17 3.5 star songs, where there's not quite like that one perfect song that clearly towers above the rest. But I think Folklore is incredibly consistent. I think this album is spottier. It's looser. She's trying a few different things. She kind of plays around like with this kind of murder ballad that she does with Haim. Matt Berninger from The National pops up in a way that I found really jarring. I actually don't care as much for her duets as I do for just her singing her own songs and not kind of trying to shoehorn other voices into them. That's kind of been a recurring thing for me with her. I do think this record is still very strong. I think it's another good record. I think you do start to get diminishing returns when you are talking about, depending on how you define the number of tracks on this album, either 32 or 34 songs that are kind of all drowsily autumnal folk music. You start to get some diminishing returns when you're talking about that many songs in the span of like 5 months. I do think this album has a career highlight for her. And I think that unlike Folklore, which I think is 17 excellent songs, I think Evermore has one absolute four-star, fantastic song in what I think should be a new holiday standard of the song, "'Tis the Damn Season." Let's actually hear a little bit of it.
If I wanted to know who you were hanging with while I was gone, I would have asked you. It's the kind of cold fogs up windshield glass, but I felt it when I passed you. There's an ache in you, put there by the ache in me.
So my first reaction to this song was that that guitar line is absolutely devastating. And I gasped the first time I heard it. It's so beautiful. And then I started to pick apart the song, which is getting at a truth about the holidays and about hometowns and about nostalgia that I hadn't really heard a song get at before. And that is an unbelievably difficult feat to pull off. This is a song about going back to your hometown around the holidays and like re-encountering somebody you had a romance with when you were like 17. And the very first line of that song, I mean, I don't have the lyrics memorized, but it's basically like, I don't know who you've been with. I would have asked you at some point in the last however many years if I cared. Like, it is getting at this real ambivalence and just kind of the pull of your past. And it is a magnificent song. And it really, for me, hit home like, man, she is extraordinarily talented. I think she continues to be kind of a frustrating artist. I often say about her that she manages to be very self-conscious without always being self-aware. And I think that kind of continues to be true. But right there, that song is a masterclass. And it should not be lost on us that in addition to being very prolific, she is a very, very, very talented songwriter.
Yeah, I think one of the things that this song really taps into, her deliberateness. I think that there has always been a discussion of like Taylor Swift as biography and autobiography. And I think here, regardless of whether this is based on a personal experience, based on some sort of like a universal experience, again, like what you talked about, this idea of going back to your hometown, like there is clearly a literary element and also like an interpersonal, like this is a thematic element. She mentions in that song mud tracks on truck tires. And I love thinking about this song sort of hearkening back to sort of like those early like country songs from her earliest days. To me, there is this element of looking back at her catalog that is happening on this Folklore Evermore era. She has both the artistic growth of experimenting and having some like really disastrous experiments, but also some really winning moments. The other thing that you rightfully pointed out is that those guitars, again, this feels like such a wonderful musical match for the way that she has this sort of cadence. Again, I think I said this last time around that she's not the best singer, and that's okay.
Right.
But she does deliver it with such like intent and deliberation. Like I said, I think that Here again, you get the sense that she recognizes her faults, recognizes her capabilities, and really, like, when she falls back to some of the same literary elements, this feels actually novel. There's a continuity element that tracks across her discography, but this also puts her in a really forward-thinking place.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting when you say, like, she's not the best singer or whatever, that's not a knock on her at all. Like, the history of rock and folk music is absolutely festooned with people who have vocal limitations and are still able to get at incredible, profound, heartfelt truths. I mean, having, like, impeccable vocals is not always a strength when you're talking about conveying feelings. And I think she's very deft at singing conversationally, and that's a very, very tricky thing to pull off. To get back to one of my kind of central critiques of the albums she's put out this year, I think these two albums really prove how effective she can be as a collaborator from a songwriting standpoint, but I don't think she is yet a particularly effective collaborator as a vocalist. I don't particularly take to how her voice matches up with that of Matt Berninger or Justin Vernon. And those are two singers whose work I am on record as pretty deeply loving, but I don't think their voices go particularly well together. I think Haim almost entirely disappears from the song that they're on. What do you think of her as, like, a vocal collaborator?
I think in her previous work, she's chosen some weak collaborators. It makes sense that she would go to Ed Sheeran, sort of someone that she was a mentor to or was an accolade of hers. Here, I prefer Justin Vernon's collaboration with Taylor Swift on this record than I did the collaboration that was on Folklore Exile. That's more the, you know, person of the woods, the cabin, the flannel. This feels like it's that innovation that really has come through on the last couple of Bon Iver records. And why don't we actually hear a little bit of that Bon Iver collaboration? It's the title track, Evermore.
All my waves are being tossed. Is there a line that I could just go cross?
And when I was shipwrecked, I thought of you.
All the things that will be lost now.
In the cracks of light,
can we just get apart?
I dreamed of you.
To be certain we'll be told to be the good.
And it was real enough.
So I like that Justin Vernon brings that to this project, because you can tell that Taylor Swift's in there collaborating with this group of people who have worked together. You know, The National, Bon Iver, they're all sort of this cohort. So I like that there is a confidence and an artistic freedom. The Haim track, I'm on the fence about. I feel like it's an attempt at some camp that doesn't really get there for me.
No, nobody, no crime, but I ain't letting up until the day I die.
I like the idea of Taylor experimenting with country. I like Haim's new record so much, it was my favorite of the year, but this does not feel like it's really, like, either of their best work. It's fun. That Olive Garden mention got a laugh out of me. And what did I expect an actual song credited to The National and Taylor Swift to sound like? Not Coney Island. I think that there's sort of a theatrical element that doesn't quite get there for me. Again, I like all of what she's trending towards on this record, but I don't know if she sticks the landing as much.
Yeah, I hear that completely. I think you and I are more or less in the same boat. One last question before we go. Lindsay McKenna, you follow the career of Taylor Swift pretty closely. Taylor Swift leaves a lot of Easter eggs. She drops a lot of hints that people don't even realize are hints until later. Where do you think she goes from here? Do you think this is part two of a trilogy? Like, we're going to be back here in March having yet another conversation about Taylor Swift.
So there's the speculation. So at this particular moment, Taylor Swift has promised to re-record her original albums in order to free them sort of from the grip of Scooter Braun and his holding company. She has already started that, as we know, through a Match.com ad, but she has not completed it, she said on Twitter. There is talk that this could be a trilogy. Here is my counter to that.
Okay.
I feel like you are right, Stephen, to say that these albums are a little bloated. You know, 17 tracks or 15 tracks with bonus tracks, that's a lot. And in the streaming era, that sort of feels like a commercial necessity. Mm-hmm. But in my brief write-up for NPR Music, I said that I felt this particular moment in Taylor Swift's sort of career trajectory is marked by artistic freedom. And at the same time, she's untethered from the expectation that she makes a record that sounds like X or Y.
Right.
She's made these experimental, intricate, sort of subdued, like definitely not radio-friendly pop albums.
Right.
Does she continue to go in this direction? Does she make the Joni Mitchell singer-songwriter or the early country sound that folks have been clamoring for? I don't know if that makes the most sense. I do think that those reworkings are off in the distance at some point, just for the sake of like earning the back catalog money from licensing.
Right.
But does that mean that there is folklore evermore, something more, and those re-recordings? That is a lot. And definitely care about this artist, but I do not want the market to be completely oversaturated with Taylor Swift mania.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is telling that we went from, wow, this new Taylor Swift record in July is great, to, in the intro, why won't Taylor Swift let us live?
Yep.
Well, we want to know what you think about Evermore. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks so much for being here, Lindsay.
Thank you, Stephen.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We'll see you all right back here tomorrow when we'll be talking about the HBO Max series, The Flight Attendant.
Abigail Disney says if she ran the family company, she'd deal with the current economic crisis very differently.
A CEO should be like a ship's captain. You know, if other people are drowning, you're the last one off the ship.
Ideas about the history and future of finding financial stability. That's on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.